With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show. I'm Tim Fuel, back for another instalment of news, views and grassroots news. Lots to get through as ever, but before we begin, I must say hello to my co-host tonight, the familiar voice of non-league managerial legend, Dave Anderson. Good evening, Dave Anderson.
Good evening, Swampy. Again, people would say more than legend, but it's good to be here, mate.
Yeah, no Swampy this evening. He seems to have picked up more bugs than a child in a playgroup.
I think he's avoiding me. I ain't spoke to him for a long time because whenever he's in, I'm out. It's as if we're the same person, you know.
I've seen you both in the same room at the same time. You're not the same person. I can assure you. So we've got middle of February now. Yeah, half term, heavy pitches. It's about the time of season really sort of properly sort of start shaking up a bit, doesn't it? As a manager, is this now where you earn your corn, Dave?
Well, I think you're in your corn all year round. I always think the off season's as important as any run-in. But I know what you mean. The pitches have changed now. The sort of heavy pitches, the postponements kick in. You've got to keep things ticking over. It's also a good time to freshen your squad by whatever you think you need. Even just to give the dressing room a little lift. I would say that we earn our corn week in, week out. But I know what you mean. You're trying to set yourself up for the run-in, which all of a sudden everybody gets a little bit more focused than they have been for some reason. So we're going to speak to some guys later in the show who will be certainly earning their corn, because as we go into the run-in, if you're up there, you certainly want to add the right people to your squad. You want to make sure you get the buzz around the dressing room to kick on and try and get your promotion or playoffs. And you know, every bit as important as the guys at the bottom who are trying to find something that will change the form and the run that they're in. So, but then that's it week in, week out. I think what happens, Tim, is people start to focus a little bit more on it, but I guess managers should be earning their corn week in, week out.
Well, obviously, yeah, every week we tend to report on managers that have got no corn to earn anymore. we'll come to a few of those in a minute. But after last week's financial doom and gloom of clubs around the pyramid, this week it seems the theme has been loss of points. The Northern Premier League appear to have been going on a bit of a purge of administrative issues, and that's sort of made a change to a number of the tables. In the South Division, Frickley Athletic, they were hit with a three-point deduction in relation to a lone player who played four games that proper permission wasn't obtained for. In the Premier, you've got Houndsditch Town, who were just off the bottom. Their 4 points are taken away for playing a player whilst he was under a written contract with another club. Shore Lane up the top there, they've been docked 3 points that they earned in the games when they fielded a player under disciplinary suspension. Bottom of the table in the Premier, you've got Sutton Coldfield Town, and they've also been deducted a point over loan paperwork discrepancies for the two games that their player played in. I've always said it's never easy being a secretary, but when those sort of things hit you at this time of year, it changes your season, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And, you know, people are no stranger to the story I had when I was at Wimbledon. We were docked 18 points because Jermaine Darlington, the club secretary, had never got international clearance for Jermaine, who, it would have to be said, retired from football. I talked him out of retirement, but his last registered club was Cardiff City. So obviously then there should have been international clearance. That the secretary at Wimbledon didn't realise that, to be truthful, neither did I. Although I'm not taking responsibility, it was his department. I had enough on my plate. And we get docked 18 points. So these things happen. And listen, as a manager, it's very frustrating and annoying. But I was always of the opinion that we all make mistakes. No one at a football club makes mistakes on purpose. No one wants to do the team wrong. And mistakes happen. It's on the field, in the dressing room, and in the boardroom, and certainly in the secretary's office. So the guys who are involved in these will be embarrassed about them, and will have sleepless nights over the mistakes they've made. But you know, my advice to them would be, you know, move on. We all make mistakes. You know, it's the next time you do it, I'd be having a problem with you. You know,
it's certainly not a job or role that I've ever volunteered for. You know, even just filling in that team sheet, you know, it can be an issue. Did you see the story of the Greys right back Ryan Mahal? He ended up playing in goal after their replacement goalkeeper didn't make the team sheet. Apparently, you know, as you probably did, Dave, you scribbled down your team on a little sheet, and then someone else, normally the match day secretary, fills in the official team sheet and then hands that over to the referee. Well, apparently the little scribble just had JS on there, and whoever filled in the official team sheet thought that meant player manager Jamie Stewart and not the reserve goalkeeper, who had the same initials. So when the first goalkeeper gets injured after half an hour, the first choice goalkeeper has to go off, and then they look around trying to put the reserve goalkeeper on, and then realise he's not on the team sheet, and Ryan Mahawa ends up going in goal. They didn't win, but he did put in a man of the match performance. You know, it just shows how easily mistakes can be made, and they're honest mistakes as well. You know, everybody's, you know, most people in these positions are doing this as a volunteer's job, and these things can happen. But you know, it's going on to those managerial things again. You know, in the news this week, Jamie Day's moved up north to rejoin AD Pennock on the coaching team at Barrow. You've got Gainsbury Trinity. They've been quick to appoint with Lee Sinnott named as their new manager this week. And at Boreham Wood, Luke Garrard's just been given a contract extension for getting his side into playoff contention, a new deal until the end of 2019-20 season. Elsewhere, another midweek defeat for Rock Bottom Guiseley, and at the end for Paul Cox and his assistants. So, and that one's probably the biggest surprise for me, because you know, Paul's a very experienced manager. He only came in September. I think he's had 5 months in charge. They went full time since he's been there just at the very end of last year, and then they've had 6 straight defeats, and that's the end of it. And I know it's a results business, but you would have thought that maybe someone like Paul, they were always going to struggle to get out of that relegation spot anyway, and they've just gone further and further adrift. But maybe Paul's the sort of person you need next season in National North to rebuild that side. But you know, obviously the chairman thinks otherwise.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I think that, you know, it's not a gamble with Paul. You know, he's an experienced man. What goes on behind the scenes, as we often say here, we don't know what promises Paul made when he came in. Maybe that hasn't happened, but I would have thought with the change of going full time, and we all have bad runs. I just think it just seems to destabilise the club even more by changing the manager. You know, I would let it run, but that's, I would always say that being a manager, I'd like to know behind the scenes, Tim. I'd like to know, you know, what was promised when Paul came in and took the job. What did he say? What was expected of him? How did they feel that going full time? Which, you know, we spoke the other week to Anthony Johnson, is it, at Salford, about, you know, going full time, which is really, really difficult changeover. So I would have thought maybe they'd have stuck with him unless there's some behind the scenes that we don't know about, mate.
Well, maybe we'll find out over time. One other last news piece, that Basingstoke Town, they're going to spend another half a season until the end of 2018 at the Camrose as their artificial grass pitch, which has been installed at their new home, which they're going to share with the Hampshire FA, isn't going to be ready. And that the Camrose then is then going to go off for development. That. So Terry Brown's boys will have another 6 months or so at the Camrose.
Well, as long as the bar's open, I'm sure Brownie will be fine. Listen, I better say, I'm only joking. I know Terry well. I think he's done a steady job there. It's something they wanted to introduce youth and go with youth, and they've done that. They've sort of held their position sort of mid-table, you know, most of the season. And this sort of upheaval in and around a football club, then they're fortunate to have Terry in charge, because he'll just take all that with a pinch of salt, Tim, you know. But I must say, going back to the Gray story about the team sheet, you know, at all my clubs, it's the same sort of thing. You know, I've done it with initials, I've done it with just surnames, I've done it with nicknames, and I've always given it to someone else and they read it, the team sheet. Most, it would have to be said, most secretaries would come back with it fully wrote out and say to you, have a look through that, make sure it's right.
And would you check it, Mr. Anderson? Have you checked every one of those? How many times have I seen players run out with the wrong numbers on?
Yeah. Yes, no. But what that does is it puts the ball back in my court, doesn't it? So once the secretary comes back and says, Dave, have a look at that. Is that right? If I don't read it and it's wrong, it's not his fault. It's my fault. And as the manager of a football club, that's the way it should be. So I would say I understand that managers tend to do this through laziness on my part most of the time, and plus my spelling's terrible. I've got my name tattooed on my arm, so I can spell it, you know. But I would always say to the secretary, you know, check it with the manager after you've wrote it out.
We need to get managers an app to fill in so it goes straight. So to our first guest of the week. After weeks of reporting about clubs falling about at the seams, it's nice to have one to chat about that's pulling together communities and double-stitching the seams, ready for the long haul. Last week, too late to be included in last week's show, two local rivals playing in the same town, playing in the same league, playing in the same division, made an announcement that at first glance rocked nearly everybody that read it. But once it sank in, it was the most sensible announcement in football this season. Ossett Town and Ossett Albion of the Northern Premier First Division North announced they were to merge. To tell us more, James Rogers, chairman at Ossett Town and board member of the new Ossett United, is on the line. Good evening, James.
Good evening, Tim.
So last week the world was told, but looking at how organised it all seemed and how together everybody seems, this must have been several weeks, if not months, in the making.
It's weeks rather than months. We had the first discussion in the second week of January. So literally between that first discussion and then making an announcement last week, it was 4 weeks. So it progressed really quickly.
Wow. Can we get you making decisions in other areas of football as well?
Sometimes I think you've got to take the moment, and that's what we decided to do. The reality is that we're probably, I think, the smallest town in the country to have two football teams at this level. We've got a town population of just over 20,000 people, two football teams at step four, non-league, and we're competing for supporters against each other, we're competing for commercials. And once we had that sort of initial discussion and sort of shared our joint ambitions, it just made absolute sense. And with the FA deadlines and the league deadlines that we had to meet, it meant that if we were going to do it, we ought to act sooner rather than later.
And had it ever been discussed in the past, in sort of years gone by, and sort of then put on the shelf?
Yeah, lots of time. I mean, history has it that Ossett Town was set up in 1936. The committee of Ossett Town fell out allegedly in 1944, and then half of them set up Ossett Albion, and we've been competing ever since. And on and off over many years, it's been sort of muted as a possibility. But I don't think the ingredients previously have ever been quite right. But now we seem to have got two sort of boards running both clubs who've got an equal ambition, get on well together, and therefore we can, I think, make the most of it.
Yeah, and I love the new Twitter account that's been set up for United, and the tagline, born out of desire for progression and stability. It says it all, doesn't it?
It does. And we're also using the sort of tagline, stronger together as well, which is what we believe we can do by sort of joining our collective forces and then trying to achieve that ambition of playing at the highest level of football for Ossett and Wakefield that we can.
Dave, I think you've got a question.
Yes, I do. I have a couple of questions, actually. The first one, as a manager, would be, what happens in that department? Because obviously, you're going to have to put two dressing rooms into one, James.
Yeah, we've had a discussion with both managers. We initially said that we would take a decision at the end of the season, so we didn't have any disruption this season. But I think it's clear that both managers want to know the outcome. It's actually they need to start thinking now about next season. So as it happens, after I put the phone down, I'm actually going for a meeting with the other directors of Ossett United, and that's one of the things on the agenda about how we take that forward. And as for players, clearly we've got two teams going into one. We've got some very good players from both teams, and what we said to all the players that they've all got a chance to prove themselves. So work with us over the next few weeks, and let's get the strongest team possible that we can for next season.
I think it sounds a real good idea. The, you know, but I'm sort of. I work at football clubs. As far as supporting them, it's, you know, I don't tend to support a football club because I've worked at so many. So what about your supporters? Because I know for a fact my local sides are Harborough and Wilston, and Monies Harborough, and I've played against Wilston on many occasions, and there is a hatred of they hate each other. I wouldn't say they'd kill each other, but they. In the world of football, there's a real hatred between the two sets of fans. How have you managed to get over that, the derby stuff?
I think there's probably two ingredients at play here. One is that actually all supporters, whether you support one team or the other, they've grown up together in the same community. They've been to the same schools. Their kids go to the same schools. We drink in the same pubs. We eat in the same restaurants in the town. And therefore, whilst there's a rivalry, it's actually quite a friendly rivalry that we've got because actually we're all part of the same community. So I think that's one reason. I think another reason as well is that we're very much both community-led clubs. So people who are sort of involved in running and are the supporters are actually the volunteers running the club as well. So they actually see at first hand the challenges that we've got on a day-to-day basis in terms of competing with one another and competing with everybody else in the league to try and maintain our current position, never mind progression to the future.
Yeah, excellent. Last one for me, and you know, you've answered them all really honestly. The new badge and the new kit, how have you gone? Is that something completely different from the two clubs, or have you taken a little bit of each club? Have you even designed that stuff yet? Have you got the kit sorted out? How's that going to be?
Well, if you look at our current colours, Ossett Town playing all red and Ossett Albion playing a sort of gold and black colour. We decided quite early on that it would be nonsense to try and merge those colours, not least because we probably struggled to get a kit actually with those colours in them. But we also, because we're actually saying this is something new, we want to see as a new club, we've actually decided to go for a blue colour, and the sort of base branding colour of the club will be blue. And again, tonight, one of the things on the agenda that we're discussing is both kit and both new badge. One of the things we're really keen to do is to actually get the supporters involved in actually helping choose which badge ultimately we go with as well. We've all experienced recently Leeds United's proposed attempt at a new badge, and what we want to do is make sure we get something the supporters actually like and feel that it's part of them.
Excellent.
Looking at the table, obviously at the moment, you've got Albion just above that single relegation spot, Town mid table. How does it work from here? Are you consulting with the FA about, you know, when does the new club take effect? Is that after the very end of the season, and then there's a new club, and it's all, you know, from someone looking in who's been involved with a merger and all the issues that go with it. I'm always fearful that there doesn't seem to be, although everybody encourages all these things, and it is the best option for clubs in a smaller community to, you know, for long term, there doesn't seem to be necessarily a procedure to follow that helps you get to where you need to get to.
There's an FA procedure, because the FA have very clear deadlines about what you've got to do by when. So we've met the first deadline, which was for the FA to accept our application to merge. The next deadline is the 31st of March, where we've got to present to the FA our detailed proposals, constitution, accounts, etc., etc. So there's a long list of documents that we've got to pull together They will then go to the FA, and assuming that they satisfy the FA requirements, then everything should be in place then for ready for next season.
And so does one club assume another club status, or is it just a complete whole new club? Or you don't know whether
it's a whole new club, but the league rule actually says that the new club will go into the division of the lowest placed club. So clearly we're needing Ossett Albion to follow their form that they've had in the last couple of months and climb away from that sort of danger zone that they're currently
I've seen you've already been sharing season tickets, so fans of season ticket holders of both clubs can come and watch both clubs this season. A potential for loaning some players in and out there as well, just to maintain that status.
There's always the potential. And the reality is, you always find at this level that players move from club to club, and I can guarantee you that every season that we've had players who've moved from Ossett Town to Ossett Albion and Ossett Albion to Ossett Town, and that could well be something that happens again before we get to the transfer deadlines that we've got within our league.
And I mentioned, you seem very, very organised. Normally a merger, like in the case of my club, it means that one ground's being sold for development and everybody moves into the other one. But you're going to have two grounds. You're going to have the town ground and maintain that and have invest in some of the grass pitch there, and then have an academy and training facility at Albion. It sounds like you've got the best of both worlds there.
Yeah, man, I think it's a great opportunity. I think the reality is that whilst we're a small town, we've got two teams at this level, plus we've got two reserve teams currently, two under-19s teams. We've got NPL academy teams, and we've got probably between the two clubs about 1,000 children involved in the two junior sections. Wow. So one of the things we need for the town is to maximise and improve the facilities that we've got, and we've got two good grounds, so why not make best use of those for the broader community?
Well, indeed, if there's any learnings from my own club's difficulties, wrapping your arm around those young players and youth teams, that's the way forward to help your club grow and thrive post-merger. So from my point of view, it sounds like it's a fantastic idea, and hopefully everybody will back the new club, and you'll be able to move forward. And hopefully we'll talk to you early next season and find out how it's all gone on.
Yeah, that'd be great, Tim, and thank you very much for having me on.
Dave, it does make financial sense, doesn't it? And particularly if they're going to then have one super ground to play football on and one to train on with an academy, and I think they were talking about putting a 3G in. It's almost like the model that everybody should follow.
Yes, it absolutely is. I wouldn't say everyone to follow, because, as I say, it happens like your own club. It happened and it seemed to go reasonably well. I know I spoke about Harrow and Wilston. I could never see that happening because of the rivalry between both clubs. But in this occasion, it just fits. It just seems like it's a fit. And if everyone's on board, as James would suggest they are, then it will make them a stronger side and a stronger football club, and with more fans and it sounds as if it can be successful. It just means that one manager is going to be out of a job, and I never like that. But you'd have to say it makes sense and wish them well with it.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, now we've mentioned throughout the season how close it has been at the top of the National League. Ahead of this weekend, just 8 points separate the top nine doing battle for the automatic top spot and the 6 places in the new playoffs. Right at the very top this weekend, second place Aldershot Town entertain first place Macclesfield Town. And I'm pleased to say Shots manager Gary Waddock joins us on the line to help us preview that game. Good evening, Gary.
Good evening.
Now, it is so tight, this division, this season. You know, 32 played in a 46-game season and so little to separate so many. As a manager, does that make your job harder with the intensity or easier because the players, you know, they can't afford to switch off?
Well, you can't afford to switch off, but, you know, all we do is concentrate on what we can do. You know, you can only control that. So we've had a decent run of late and we've put ourselves in a decent position. So but we're going to a big game on Saturday against Macclesfield.
Yeah, and you're looking at the goal difference as well. You know, only Tranmere's got a better goal difference than you in the division. Could it even come down to that at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think so, because as you said earlier there, that it's very tight, you know. So, you know, we've been able to get some goals, and the goals column 4 is positive for us. So that might come into play later on.
And you know, you've got a series of really difficult games coming up. You know, I look ahead and next week off to Wrexham as well, who were top, currently third. There's still only 2 points between all of you.
Yeah, but you forgot we play Bromley as well Tuesday, and you know that's
they're still in the hunt as well, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, everybody's looking at say Macclesfield and Wrexham, but Bromley have done very, very well this season, and you know, every game that you play at this level is difficult, and you know, you can't underestimate anybody, and that's just as important, the Bromley game, for us.
Dave?
Yeah, to be fair, Gary, it is going to be a hard one even to for a punter to call it, you know. When you go into these games, I mean, the 3 games you've just said, you know, sitting where you are, you're in good form going into them.
Yeah.
Have you actually learned how to enjoy games like this, Gary?
They're the games you want to be involved in. You know, the big games, you know, and come, everybody talks about the business end of the season, how important games are. But, you know, the first game of the season is just as important as the run of games that we're going into, because there's 3 points at stake and, you know, you're trying to get that win to get them 3 points. But everybody wants to be involved in the big games, and I do look forward to it. But you know, during and after the game, if you win, you can enjoy it. But you know, if you don't get the result you're looking for, it hangs around you for a few days.
It does, and I mean, I never ever enjoyed them, if I'm honest. Afterwards, yes, but during it, never ever. And I often wonder, you know, because you've been in this position, you know. Obviously, the last time you were at the club, you're in a similar position. You've had success all throughout your career. Do you put yourself in a different mode in the big game day? Do you dress the dressing room different? Is there a, you know, how do you treat it? Because obviously, whatever you've done over the years has worked.
Yeah, well, I've been fortunate. I've experienced highs and lows in the game, and you learn from both. But I think, you know, going into any game, you have to have the dressing room calm, if you like. Players who are going in there that understand what you're trying to achieve, you know, in terms of how you want the game plan to be carried out. But also, you have to give the players the freedom to go and play and express themselves in the big games also, you know, because you want to put your stamp on the game and your authority on the game. And, you know, you have to allow the players to have that freedom to express themselves. If you're coming across nervous and uptight, you know, that's going to feed into the players, and you don't want that.
No, absolutely. And, you know, just finally for me, Gary, the new playoff system that's been brought in this year, what's your thoughts on that? Hopefully you won't need it, but just in case.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's obviously more teams involved in it, and, you know, teams that are, you know, probably middle of the table, have got ambitions to get into the playoffs. So it keeps the season ticking over for a lot of clubs. But, you know, I would personally like to see one more team be promoted automatically. I think
here.
You know, that would help everybody at our level. But it is what it is, and you know, everybody's trying at the moment to go up as champions, and you know, there's a few of us in the mix trying to do that.
And obviously, you mentioned, you know, you've had highs and lows, but you've been here before, you know, taking the shots up. But do you think that, you know, affects the fans' expectancy and sort of adds to pressure for you as and as the players? Is there that sense of expectancy for amongst the fans?
Possibly, and obviously, you know, where we are currently as well in the table, I think everybody is looking for a promotion, but that's very easy for us to have a conversation about that. But to actually go and achieve it, it's a very different and hard task, you know.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think the expectation is high. But it is what it is. You have to be able to control that. There's nothing that, you know, myself, James, my assistant, or the staff and the players can do about that. We just got to go and concentrate on the next game in hand, and hopefully we can pick up 3 points. We don't know where we're going to finish. We just don't. Sure. It's, you know, we can talk about it now, but, you know, until that final whistle goes, we don't know where we're going to finish in the table. We just got to do as best we can, hang in there for as long as we can, and see where we end up.
And are you somewhere, guys, you know, nagging into it, you know, with the experience you have? If you were to take Gary Waddock, the manager, back sort of 10 years going into a period like this with a side where they are, yeah. How have you changed? How's that experience changed you?
Well, I think, you know, as you said, I've been in this position before, and, you know, you probably know how to control your emotions better, whereas 10 years ago, you're younger. But now I'm a little bit more experienced, a little bit older, a little bit wiser. And you can feel the dressing room, and you just don't want that, you know, nervousness or anything to creep into it. And to try and keep it as calm and as relaxed as you possibly can. I think that's probably what's probably changed more over that period of time for me as a manager.
And off the field, Gary, you've been back there a while now. Is the club ready to go back into the Football League?
You know, that question was asked to me the first time around about 10, 11 years ago. So I think they'll have to be ready. Let's put it like that. If we actually achieve it, they're going to have to be ready. You can't pick and choose when you want to get promoted. If it happens, you know, fantastic for everybody. And we'll just have to gear ourselves up for that. But we've got a lot of hard work ahead of us before we can start talking like that.
Oh, fantastic. Good to speak to you, Gary. As you say, it's still a long way to go, but you can't afford to even take your eyes off it for one moment, can you?
No, well, you can't. And, you know, this week, obviously it starts Saturday against Macclesfield, and then we've got Bromley, and then we've got Wrexham. So, you know, over the course of a week, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen. You could have a fantastic week, or the performances ain't great, and you come away with it with not too many points. So it changes game to game, week to week, because it's so tight up at the top. So that's why I'm keeping my feet firmly on the ground, and let's see where we finish come that final whistle at the end of the season.
Well, listen, we wish you all the best, mate. I think
brilliant, mate. Thank you very much. Well, lovely to talk to you both.
And you, take care of yourself. Firmly planted on the floor, those feet there, aren't they, Dave?
Yes, and you know, I remember Gary Waddock playing as the player. I've known Gary a long time, and he was very similar as a player, wholehearted, and never get carried away with who he was, and went into management, done exactly the same thing, and all of that experience, that playing experience, and you know, playing under the managers that he has, and then becoming a manager himself, and now an experienced and successful manager, it would have to be said. I'm just always interested in how different people see it and what experience does to them. You know, he's one of them guys you wish well. You know, he's a good lad, and he's been very successful. As is the rest of the guys up there. Listen, I've never managed in a conference, but I've been everywhere else, and you know, as we say it all the time, Tim, it's not an easy job, and it's a job that you answer questions really carefully at this time of year, and Gary's picking and choosing what he says, because someone will chuck it straight in your face if you say the wrong thing. So that's an experience thing as well. You have to deal with all that side of it, and then go in the dressing room and be as calm as you like. Maybe that's where I fell down.
Do you think it's easier to be up there when it's so tight? Is it actually probably easier to be in the bottom bit and fighting the relegation battle because people haven't got the same expectations?
Listen, the bottom of the league is twice as hard as the top of the league, in my opinion. The reasons why, I would say, because when you're at the top of the league, you maybe lose 6 games a season, you know, and so the dressing room's a happy place, a bubbly place, a place of confidence, and an easier place to steer the ship, if you like, because, you know, the lads are used their success and it becomes habit. You know, it's like everything else in life, it becomes habit. When you're at the bottom and you're maybe only going to win, I don't know, 15 games in a season, you go through long periods of not winning. It's an edgy place. It's a place where you're always trying to lift the guys. It's a place where you become like an Oscar-winning actor at times as a manager, because you go in the happy guy, having left your office, like, thinking, how do you do this? Where do you pick the guys up from there? So I always found it easier to manage at the top. The pressure is the pressure. The expectancy at both ends is always there, Tim. But I think trying to drag people up week after week at the bottom, I found a lot more difficult.
So a point separating second from first in the National League as they take on each other this weekend. And so close is it that only another point separates second from third, and another point separating third from fourth. So a massive set of games on Saturday when fourth place Sutton United entertain third place Wrexham. Taking a quick break from preparing his troop, Sutton boss Paul Doswell joins us on the line. Good evening, Paul.
Good evening, guys.
Now, we spoke earlier in the season, and I think you mentioned how tight the league was going to be this season, but did you ever imagine that the top four would only be a win apart by the middle of February?
I sort of did, to be honest. It was I always expected Tranmere to come through the pack, which they've now done, but I think they'd still go down to almost eighth or ninth place. There's still so few points between us that it's that's what it's looking like to me. There's sort of 9 or 10 teams that are left in it to claim those 7 places.
Yeah, and is the fact that it's so tight, is that a good thing for the league? Does that show that it's stronger in depth?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. A lot of people are saying it's a poor league this year because no one's run away from it. I would go the other way and say that there's more teams that are better organised and it's harder to beat any team in this league. So, you know, I wouldn't say there's necessarily a standout team this year, but Tranmere on their day are still the best team, I think, in the league.
And they're not even in the top four as you are.
You're talking a point or 2 points, so that's why, you know, there's a third of the season left. Yeah, I think people are clearly getting excited about it, but get to 6 or 7 games to go, and if it's still that tight, then it does become, you know, it does become really, really interesting. But it's an old adage, but it'll be one game at a time up until, you know, you know where you're going to end up.
Mr. Anderson.
And we've just spoke to Gary Waddock on a similar sort of theme. Does, but when you say one game at a time, how do you keep your troops? How do you keep the dressing room sort of focused on the next game? What's the theme? You know, calmness or just, you know, I'm always interested in how people work within their dressing room, because we don't get to see, we know each other, but we never just get to see each other work. So how do you and your staff go about the next, if you like, month?
I think the thing is, Dave, with us as well, you know, we're probably uniquely placed in some ways because, you know, no one expected us to be up there. As a club, there's no pressure on us to go up. In fact, you know, if we didn't go up, it probably wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for the football club, if I'm being honest, financially. You know, we got a lot of work to do to replace the pitch to go up. So there's other chairmen that are demanding of their managers that they go up this year. you know, and some of those are actually in the bottom six that have been demanding. So we're in a slightly different position. All of us are relaxed about it. I'm relaxed about it. And I think in that calm manner, you know, we always just say to him, just take this next game, and we'll see what it brings. But, you know, we've consistently done well all season. We've been in the top five or six all season, top occasionally. And that's been a kiss of death for everybody. But it really is just, you know, enjoying it as much as anything. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Saturday. So are the lads. And, you know, we have a big crowd there. And it's something that, you know, we sort of really enjoy. We enjoy the sort of bigger games, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, and again, I more or less said the same to Gary, because I hated them. I hated the big... Don't get me wrong, afterwards, when you look back, you go, well, that's what it's all about. You know, the big games define you. And it's, but how do you enjoy it? Tell me how you make... How do you... You turn up to a game like Saturday. How do you actually enjoy it without being stressed out?
As I said, honestly, I think we are quite uniquely placed as a football club. You know, when you've got the Tranmere's and Eastleys and, you know, Leighton Orients, Wrexham's, you know, they're desperate to get back into the league. Hartlepool would be another one. You know, they're in a slightly different position to us. I mean, Gary's chairman would love them to be in League Two. You know, and I wouldn't say he's demanding of it, but Gary himself would want to get into League Two as I think all those clubs.
But so would you. You know, I've known you a long time. You know, winning's in your ethos, you know. So as much as you're saying, yeah, you're relaxed, and I believe you're an honest guy, you know, surely Paul Doswell wants to be a league manager as well.
Dave, I've said many times, as you know this, in the past, that I'm not a CV manager, so I'm quite happy to be at Sutton. I've been here 10 years, and I'd like to get as long as I could here, because it's going to be a one-club scenario for me. I always honestly felt the National League was a great league. It's what I always aspired to. I never aspired to be a league manager particularly. If it happens with Sutton, then that's great. And if it doesn't, as I said, I'm very, very... I think it's a great league, the National League, for us as a club. But yeah, if we go up, we'll embrace it and we'll go with it. But it's not something that is certainly life or death for me, Dave, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, no, and to be fair, you've always been honest, though, so I wouldn't question. You know what?
I'm sorry not to be more enthusiastic about it, but that's it. I love non-league football. I always have done as well. You know, I love the ethos of non-league football. And, you know, as I said, if we get up, then that's great, and we'll give it a go. But if we don't, then I'm equally as happy, you know. Bearing in mind, a lot of people thought we might struggle this year on the second season. So we're just chuffed to be where we are, to be honest.
And what's this? You know, we've been told that the pitch, you know, as far as we're aware, wouldn't be accepted in the Football League.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure, I think that's as it stands. Is that the end of the road with that, Paul? Or, you know, can we, you know, can you take it to any more sort of appeals? Or is that it? If you go up, the pitch has to come up.
David, that's probably one of the reasons that you know, I'm not really bothered one way or the other in terms of us going up, because if we do go up, it's going to cost us £500,000 to put a grass pitch down, which we will have to do. That answers that question. We've got to do that. The silly thing is, if they vote in June in favour of 3G, it means that we'll be going up, putting £500,000 to a grass pitch and then renewing it the year after back to a 3G. The one area that we are definitely looking at is the possibility of ground sharing for a season if we did go up, so that we could, you know, wait for the vote in June and see what happens with it before replacing the grass as well.
But surely in the situation that you're in, does they would surely there should be some common sense where people would say to you, look, we are going to go to a vote in June. If you go up, we're going to allow you, you know, the first season because of the situation that you're in?
Dave, honestly, I'd love to think so. I'm not convinced that people overly want Sutton United in the league, if I'm being honest. I think that we're an inconvenience to them with the pitch more than anything. It's a private members club, the EFL. They can vote as they want. And, you know, it's not a direction from the EFL. It's not a direction from even the EFL chairman, Sean Harvey, who's been fantastic, to be fair to him. It's the clubs that will vote, and it's like turkeys voting for Christmas, Dave. You know, if they don't think that one ball's going to go down, why would they vote it? And you know, I'm just watching Arsenal play Austin tonight, and you know, Arsenal played very, very well on a 3G pitch, which is almost identical to ours. The argument doesn't stand up anymore, and like you said, common sense, you know, it should prevail, but does it often? I don't know.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Well, listen, I've hogged the interview, so I'm going to let Tim back in. He'd be pulling his hair out. But as always, mate, good luck, and I'll maybe see you before the end of the season.
Yeah, top man, Dave. Thank you, mate. Thank you.
Cheers.
Just a couple more from me, Paul, because obviously, you know, that 3G pitch must have been bringing some, you know, superb revenue in for you as well, you know, since it's been down.
Tim, that's a fact. I mean, let's just put another fantasy to bed whilst we're on the show, right? The 3G pitch doesn't make a lot of money. What it does is it gets 42 of our junior teams, Sutton United junior teams, playing every night of the week on it. With seven girls teams now, four disabled teams, and a ladies team. As soon as you take out the loan for the pitch, by the time you take out the 3G manager's wages, because he's got to be there 7 days a week, plus the floodlights, plus, you're talking a real minimal amount of money. What the pitch does is it engages the community, and it means that our crowds have trebled on the back of it, from 600 to ours. Just over 2,000 is the average up there now. So, and that's all, if you look around our ground now, it's mainly kids that are coming with their mums and dads that have got involved with the club. And you know, it's not a massive revenue earner. What it does is it gets all of the local community involved in the club, and they feel part of it. And because of it, our crowds have got better. You know, so it's, you know, it's not about the revenue. It's about what it does. And more importantly as well, that everyone knows if they come into a game at our place, it's going to be on.
Yeah.
You know, it's only 5 years ago that we had seven games off on the trot, didn't play for 6 weeks at home, and we had a cash flow problem. And that's a club that's really well run. So, you know, it's just been brilliant thing for every one of our junior clubs right the way through to the seniors. It's been fantastic.
Paul, sorry to come in again. What happens if you get promotion and you turn it down?
We can't, Dave. We're double relegated to Conference South. We're not doing that. I mean, we've been very clear recently.
Right.
Basically, if you don't accept promotion, it's double relegation. So we'd end up in the Conference South, and none of us are prepared to do that. That's for sure. So that's not on the agenda whatsoever. We will go up. We will take the promotion. I'm just highlighting the unnecessary costs, which we haven't got. We haven't got £500,000 out of the bank, as you well know. And the other thing is that, you know, literally, I think 800 people will be affected and not be able to play football, which is pretty much the opposite of what we're all trying to do.
And how, you know, you get promoted, do you then have to look at everything going full time and changing your whole ethos? I've been to Sutton for 20-odd years.
We're very clear what we're going to do. We're going to stay part-time, even if we're League Two. In fairness now, we'd be doing Monday, Tuesdays and Thursdays, so we're sort of part-time stroke full-time. As Dave will know, pro clubs don't train on a Wednesday, and Fridays are kicking up before they travel. So for us, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, that's what we're going to stick with. You know, it's much more than that, though. It's the financial cost of things like all the players and have to be insured by the club. That's a fortune. You know, extra police and extra stewarding. We haven't got any full-time members, a staff at the club, bar the 3G guy, who's also doubles up as the physio, Bobby Childs. You know, we haven't got any office staff. It's a million of things that we're not ready for it, but, and, you know, we'd give it a right good go if we get up there. But it'd be volunteer-based still.
That'd be a great story, though. I'd be all over it.
That's half why I want to do it. I half want to go. Yeah. I'd love it if I stayed up the first year as a part-time team and just sort of turn around. I mean, the other thing is, and I'll, you know, I know I'm getting a lot of stick about my view on 3G and the fact that I want to stick with the community. I mean, people are saying it should be played on grass, but you know, the bottom line is, I looked at the pitches the other week, and they were really, really poor in the main. You know, you're not playing on grass, you're playing on mud. You know, there's a big difference.
Absolutely. I tell you, I think, Paul, you know, and, you know, listen, I'm a traditionalist to a degree, but does that mean we should still be playing football with a ball with a lace in it and steel toe cap football boots? You know, because that's what they did in the 40s. So it's a progression. And I think that 3G, certainly when it started, the old QPR pitch was like a billiard table, and it didn't look anything like football. But when you watch games on 3G now, there's not much there's not much difference. And certainly, as someone who's managed at Hendon, when the pitch was a quagmire, and I love the place. Quagmire.
No,
and you look at it now, even Sutton.
It's a non-argument. Yeah, it's a non-argument now. It's just, you know, still playing in the Europa League on it tonight. They played at Old Pitch last season. You know, as you said, technology has moved on to such an extent that the latest 3G pitches. Listen, I was a massive Saints fan, and I went and watched us play at Oldham and Luton. Never forget getting beat 7-0 at Luton on a sand-based AstroTurf, and it was a joke. I agree with everybody. Those plastic pitches in the 80s, 90s were an absolute joke. What you've got now is the same pitches as being used at St George's by the English FA, Kilmarnock in the SPL, because they've moved on so much. And if you pay enough and pay the right money for the right pitch, you get a great surface. And you know, it's an argument, as I said, I'm not getting tired of it, but I'm getting tired of some of the, you know, just let's play on grass responses. because listen, if I had a £1 million pitch and £1 million to spend on drainage in the groundsman, I want to play on a grass pitch as well. I do.
Yeah.
But the fact is, 5 years ago, Sutton's football and the attempt to try and play football on it, our pitch was a joke. And it was a joke. Yeah. And I said that to the chairman, you know, and in the end, we stopped playing wingers because every time he passed a winger, it bobbled over his foot. You just end up launching the ball long. You can't even get through the mud. So, as I said, the arguments are thick and fast, but they just don't stand up anymore for me. And quite adamant my view on it.
No, and I find you. Don't get me. Listen, don't knock launching the ball forward. I made a career out of it.
Hey, we still do. We still do.
but I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. And if I wasn't, I would absolutely say so. And I've said this many times. I think that the standard of artificial pitches now, that I'm not saying make them compulsory, but they certainly should be an option. And I think that's
a place,
it's only a matter of time.
They've got a place for a certain level as well. I mean, a lot of this is, you know, I mean, one of the things that we're going to lobby for as well is that League One and League Two at the moment vote on this decision. And very clearly, League One clubs get £2 million solidarity payment each year. They don't need artificial pitches. They don't need community involvement because they've either got wealthy chairman or £2 million is enough for them. League Two only get £900,000 as a payment. And I would say that if you look to the accounts of the majority of League Two clubs, right, they're in a lot of trouble. I mean, a lot of trouble. Because it's a venue that opens once every 2 weeks, Dave, and any business can't survive opening once every 2 weeks. So my view is let it just go up to League Two. Let League Two clubs just take the vote and then stop it at that point. I totally get that if Sutton are getting £2 million to go into League One, then, we can afford to lay a grass pitch and we can afford to have a groundsman and have better drainage. So I'm not even advocating it has to go to League One. We're just saying I think League Two clubs, Morecambe, Accrington, Stanley, all those types of clubs are struggling on 800 and 900 people at a game. You know, they would benefit hugely from it, and that's what I'm going to lobby for is just to see if League Two clubs can do a vote, not one and two.
Yeah, well, I'm with you.
Well, I think we're
banging the drum. You know, everyone's got to bang the AFL drum.
Listen, I'm good at banging.
The FA are massively behind. People keep blaming the FA, David. It's not the FA. It's the members of the EFL that get to vote, and the FA have got no jurisdiction over them in terms of making them say yes to it. The only way you end up doing it is dragging people to court, and no one really wants to do that. It's a really costly affair. It's a time wasting affair for most people. But, you know, I've got to say it is an option that we have and are looking at. But I don't. None of us at the club go down that route. But we want fairness. We want to sort of see an element of fairness to it. And, of course, that's only if we, you know, it's only if we do go up. If we don't go up, then we keep going as we are.
And there's plenty of games to go, including the weekend. So, well, after this weekend, you know, the whole table could look very different again, couldn't it, Paul?
Yes, I think you lose a game and you don't particularly win a game, you're second. That's been happening to us. Every time we've gone top, we've lost the next game. Every time Wrexham have gone top, I think they've lost the next game. Aldershot went top, they lost. It's like nobody actually wants to be top anymore because you know you won't be there the next game. I suppose for us, we want to stay second until the last game of the season and then win that and go top for the last game. That would be the dream. That would be a dream scenario. But as I said, I generally think Tranmere would have a lot to say about it still. You know, my view is 85 points, 86 points would definitely win it this year. You know, and you look at Tranmere, that means they've got to win 11 of their 13 to get to that sort of figure, I think. So, you know, it's going to be tight. Macclesfield are clearly right up there at the moment as well. You know, Aldershot, I think they're the best footballing team in the league. I think what Gary's done down there is fantastic as well. So, no, some good sides up there, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an exciting watch, I think.
Well, hopefully we'll speak to you the day after or the week after the last game of the season that you've secured that title, and then there'll be another realm of conversations to be had.
Yeah, well, I'll be begging Dave for half a million. That's what I'll be doing.
I think you better start begging now. Yeah,
yeah. Maybe,
the begging bowl comes out early.
That's about it.
Top man.
Cheers, mate. Boys. Take care. Good luck. Bye-bye.
Yeah, excellent.
Dave, another super, super cool manager, and always prepared to give an honest verdict of the way he's approaching things.
Yeah, yes, and you know, it's funny that it was the same sort of theme with Gary Waddock. Calmness was what Gary said, a calmness. And to be fair, I think Paul Doswell did that interview then on the sofa. He sounded so laid back, you know, and again, Paul's experience now in the situation as well, and you know, that helps your dressing room, that sort of that calmness, that aura that you can deal with. It's no big issue. And Dawes is, listen, we've had him on for years, and as he's gone up through the divisions, he's always been quite upfront and tells you what he's thinking, which I always appreciate, and I know the listeners do. But I'd like to see the two of them in their dugouts. They probably are quite calm men, you know, but it's something I never really understood. I need a seatbelt in my dugout to keep me in the seat, you know, but it's a close call. I think Dawes is saying that he'll take whatever gets dealt to him, he'll deal with it. But I still know the man, and he's a winner, so he'll want his team to be up there as well. And Tim, if you can tell me who's going to win it, you're lying, because it's going to be ever so exciting for the neutral, you know.
Indeed. And I think those last games of the season are lunchtime kickoffs as well. So there's a potential for some groundhoppers to go and see a National League game at the end of the season that could make a big difference, and then maybe nip across and maybe just miss some of the first half for their local side. So, talk to some of the groundhoppers, see if there's anything in the pipeline for that. But we've run out of time again, Dave. We've covered lots again. I appreciate your time, so thank you again.
Pleasure, mate. Pleasure.
Thank you to all our guests. Thank you to everybody for listening. Remember, you can share and join in the debate on Twitter at Non-League Show, and you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, and you can also put our podcast on your website. Check out www.nonleaguefootballshow.com, where you can grab an embeddable player. Thank you and goodbye.
JIBBA JABBA.